and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As we say each week, our conversations include you. And if you'd like to join us, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Well, we are now well into the extension period of Governor Ige's emergency proclamation, expanded 3 weeks ago today, set to run until February 26th. The state and counties have more time to complete shelter and housing projects to meet the different needs of Hawaii's homeless people. Meanwhile, yesterday, a joint hearing by the Senate and House Money Committees asked some tough questions about the oversight and accountability for funds already appropriated for homeless programs and services, even as the Department of Human Services and State Homelessness Coordinator Scott Morishige asked for some additional funds for the state. Tonight, we'll talk with him, the Executive Director of the Mayor's Office on Housing for the City and County of Honolulu, Jun Yang, and Betty Lou Larson, a member of the Legislative Advocacy Committee for Partners in Care. That's Oahu's network of outreach and service providers. And, of course, you're here, too. And, again, our number is 941-3689, or if you call us from other than on Oahu, use this number, 877-941-3689. Welcome to all of you, and thank you for being with us.
Aloha. Glad to be here. Thank you.
I'd like to start, just go right around the table and get what each of you sees happening in homelessness right now that sort of as we're poised to enter the legislative session next week, and we've come through a pretty incredible period of time over the last couple of months in homelessness, with it really on the radar of so many people and certainly top of the list for the governor. And then we'll take it from there. So I'm going to start with you, Scott.
You know, I think we've continued to see just, you know, a lot of coordination happening among all parties involved, the state, all of the counties, and service providers. And I think that's reflected in the governor's emergency proclamation, this most recent extension, which applied to projects coming out of all of the different counties. Because we realize, you know, to address homelessness, we need to be united, not only here on Oahu, but statewide, because we know that homelessness is an issue that faces every county, every island throughout our state.
Betty Lou?
Aloha. I think that we're in a good situation in that we're now gathering data, which is so important. We've had 4,000 people assessed in a common assessment tool. So we now can target our initiatives to particular pockets of homeless, because one size really doesn't fit all when you're talking about the homeless. And we're in a fairly good position in that we're really looking at building more. That is critical. We have to build more affordable rental housing. We got $40 million last year, out of the governor's request. We have 50% of the conveyance tax. The advocates fought for that a couple years ago, and that's continuing. So we're in a good place to step off from.
Jun Yang.
Well, thank you for the question. We just kind of stepping building off of what both Betty Lou and Scott have said, we're building up off of real strong collaboration. From the mayor's challenge on veteran homelessness, we would not be where we are today, knowing how many veterans that we have and connected and how so many, without that collaboration between the service providers, the veteran-specific agencies, and the VA, all of us working together with the city and the state to house these individuals. We've learned quite a bit from this past year, that I think we'll be able to build our own system even stronger for 2016 and for future. I think what we can do for the future is that we know that the data helps drive the decisions. And our data, going through that process, was not as easy to obtain because our system was in transition. But it also taught us the lesson that if we don't have a strong data backbone system, it's going to be very, very difficult to get to where we want to be.
How is Sand Island progressing? Soft opening?
The soft opening happened in November, and it's exciting. We just had an opportunity to walk through with some officials from Washington, D.C. Yesterday. And walking through the facilities, it looks pretty good. It's not completely built out yet, and we expect by the end of this month that all the facilities will be in place and we'll have the full functioning location. Hale Maliola is going to be a low barrier. It is a low barrier shelter program to help bring in people who've been on the street for quite a long time and place them into other housing programs or other transitional housing opportunities.
Including veterans?
Including veterans. Why would we say no?
So how close are we to the functional zero that we thought we would be at by the end of the year?
So we wanted to be able to reach that, and we're very close. And what we have to do at this point is to take this information, the data set that we have, and send it back to HUD in Washington, D.C., and USICH, where they'll give a stamp of approval and let us know that if we did meet our functional zero goal. One thing I can tell you, or a couple of things I can tell you, through all the efforts that we had throughout the year, we were able to house, at this point, the data says, 285 veterans into permanent housing. That's through HUD-VASH and other housing resources. We know exactly how many individuals are out there who are unsheltered. A number of them are resistant to really kind of coming into work with the service providers, work with the VA or other homeless service providers out there.
When you say resistant and a number of them, are we talking, you know, 5 people? Are we talking 20 people? Do you have any sense of what that number is?
It's a smaller number. It's just under a couple dozen individuals that are out there that we have to continue to work with. And our service providers are excellent at, our outreach teams are excellent. What they're doing is really trying to build up trust in the community, trust with these individuals one-on-one and saying, hey, you know, I see you here. I want to be able to help you. Come in and start working with me. And for a long time, you know, one of the individuals that we were just able to house at the end of the year, he'd been on the street for 20 years. And because of all the things that were going on around, he used to live in Kapalama Canal area, we got him into housing just before Christmas. And, you know, it just changed. It just changes the whole perspective. You know, it's 20 years that the person has been on the street, a veteran who served our nation. And yet when he came back home, things were just not as easy as they could have been for him. And we're able to get him into housing through this effort. One thing that I think is important for all of us to understand is in an island of about 1 million people, we have 4 individuals who are unsheltered that we still are working to connect to services and on the path to housing. It doesn't mean that those are the only 4 unsheltered individuals or unsheltered veterans. It means that these, out of all the pool that we know, that the whole population of our veterans that are homeless, we have 4 individuals that we still are still actively working with.
So what's the sticking point? I mean, last year we had the landlord summit,
mm-hmm.
and there was a call for more landlords. And
yes.
there were landlords who called in Partners
Absolutely.
In Care and said that they were really beginning to understand mm-hmm. the need and why. It seems almost bizarre to think about 4 veterans being unsheltered.
Well, we have a little bit more than that. And
I mean, just those 4 that you're talking about.
So just these 4, it takes a little bit of time to get all the documents in place to get them ready for that next step. So we know that a couple of them may be HUD-VASH eligible, meaning that they have access to all VA health services. Some of them, because of their discharge status, may not be. So they have other options, as in supportive services for veterans and families. If they're not eligible for those, then we have to look into the community resource pool that we have, something like our Housing First or Shelter Plus Care or possibly Section 8. These resources all come into play when we come to find out what their need is and what their specific situation is.
Scott Morishiko, jump back in here with all this. I mean, we talk about Housing First, rapid rehousing, temporary housing, looking at, you know, asking people, do you have a room that you can rent? Do you have an ADU that you can rent? All those questions that have been asked since last November. What's your take on how successful it has been to call into the community and see what kind of response you get?
Well, I think we've really seen a tremendous response from the community. I think we've, you know, had landlords and property managers offering up units, and individuals, I think, who in the past would have been very, you know, reluctant to rent to this population, now stepping forward. We're also seeing, you know, positive response on the other islands as well. So I know on Hawaii Island, they're very interested in, you know, replicating the landlord summit that we had in Honolulu a few months ago. So they're working to try and convene similar summits in East Hawaii and West Hawaii as well.
Any idea about when that will happen?
You know, I think we're still in the process of finalizing the details. We hope that we'll be able to convene these summits sometime in the early spring this year.
And what about Maui and Kauai? Maui seemed to have a very different driver in looking at how it wanted to help homeless people by putting them more into, you know, tent accommodations as opposed to firm places where, you know, there are ADUs, or whether there might be additional rentals available just because they kept saying there aren't any?
Well, I think we've been continuing dialogue with other counties, and we see that, you know, both counties, I think, or all of the counties are really looking at, you know, trying to bring on more permanent housing solutions. I think ultimately everyone at the end of the day realizes that's how we're really going to address this issue. You know, through the emergency proclamation, for example, in Hawaii County, we're helping to bring up a project for permanent housing targeting chronically homeless individuals in West Hawaii. On Maui, they're looking at bringing up modular structures modeled after the Sand Island facility that the city and county recently brought up, and putting that in, you know, Kahului, Wailuku, and Lahaina, where they know that there's heavy concentrations of individuals who just need a little bit of extra support. So I think we're really continuing to look at this issue comprehensively and trying to make sure that we're responding to the need, not only here on Oahu, but statewide.
What kind of data do we have now that we didn't even have 2 or 3 months ago? How good is it? You mentioned that having the data is so important. What's been done over the last couple of months to be able to bring that data forward?
Well, I think that we're really continuing to work with all of the service providers. You know, we realize that in order to have good quality data, we really need to continue to invest in outreach services. Having the outreach providers who go out into the community, you know, are able to conduct the assessments on the ground level with homeless individuals throughout the state. We're continuing to try and see what we can do to support that effort. In the governor's budget, which we recently announced, we're asking for an additional $2 million specifically for homeless outreach so that we'll be able to continue that engagement, continue to expand our reach to reach people in rural areas of the state where traditionally there really haven't been as robust outreach services. For example, on the neighbor islands on Kauai, there's one part-time outreach worker for a homeless population that's estimated at over 300. And so we want to make sure that we do more to support that need and support the ability of service providers, not only to, you know, conduct assessments and get better quality data, but also to be able to reach some of these underserved individuals, which June was referencing earlier, which, you know, have been resistant to services. But I think with a little bit of extra assertive outreach, you can bring them in and really let them know about the array of services that are now online to be able to assist them, ranging from rapid rehousing to Housing First to other types of programs that we have available.
I want to take up what happened yesterday at the joint meeting of the Senate and House Money Committees in a moment. But Betty Lou, as you were talking about the data that Partners in Care was able to help to corral last year, and as we're now coming into a period of time where the point in time count will be done again, what's the difference that you see happening this year that wasn't happening last year?
Well, last year we were kind of just beginning our centralized assessment, so that now everyone will be assessed the same way, and you'll be able to rank people and basically score them. Are they chronic? Are they needing to have really supportive and wraparound services? Are they at the bottom just economically needy? About 30% at the top chronic, about 30% we're finding are just economically needy. Don't have a lot of other needs for case management. They just are financially needy. They have a gap. They can't afford the rent. They're working. They just can't afford the rents that are out there. And then you have the median, maybe 40% that a lot of families are in, where maybe they have some other issues. They do need some case management. They're not chronic, so they need a little extra help to get back on their feet. And they all need affordable housing.
Tonight we're talking about where we are right now with homelessness as we're coming into the legislative session next Wednesday. Obviously, this is top of mind for a lot of people, lawmakers, the governor, and maybe you too. We want to hear what's on your mind, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If you call us from the neighbor islands, as we're looking at what may be happening in your neighborhood or what you think should be happening in your neighborhood as we're looking to stem homelessness even more this year than perhaps we did last year. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Yesterday, Scott, at the joint meeting of the House and Senate Money Committees, there were a lot of very pointed questions about accountability, about beds that were available that weren't being used. And you said about 150 go fallow of an evening. And then there was the question of, well, you know, how well are we using this money as you're asking for more? And how well are these systems really mapped to know how much is being done by, you know, one group, organization, or outreach provider and might be redundant with another? that was a pretty difficult set of questions and questions that we all would like to have answered. How do you begin to flesh out more of that than perhaps we heard in sound bites?
Well, I think that, you know, our system really has made a lot of progress. We have a much better understanding of what the needs of our homeless population is, how our current resources are being utilized. So I think the state as well as city and county are continuing to look very closely at those resources to make adjustments along the way. This past year, we've started to reduce barriers in our shelters because we know we've seen from the data and actually heard from homeless individuals out in the community that there are some things that prohibit certain individuals or make them more resistant to enter some of our traditional shelters. So we've looked at increasing hours of operation, reducing some of the requirements to get into shelter, and I think that's made a big difference. In one of the shelters in Waipahu on Oahu, we've been able to see a dramatic uptick in the number of people who are staying at that shelter on any given night, just because of the change in making that converting that shelter from a 12-hour shelter to a 24-hour shelter.
That also, one would assume, means more money to keep it open 24 hours.
Yes, and I think what we're doing, though, is we're not just putting more money, throwing more money at the problem. We're really making targeted allocations of our resources based on the data. So again, as the state looks at whether we need more shelter inventory online, we're making decisions informed by data, looking at, well, where is the unmet need in the population? We know that, there are vacancies in shelters for single adults and couples, but we know that there's a lack of shelter space for unsheltered families with young children. We know that we're seeing more and more of those visibly on the street, not only in Kaka'ako and Kapalama Canal and other areas. So as the state is looking at how do we address that need, we've targeted the new shelter beds that we're bringing online in Kaka'ako, specifically at unsheltered families. We're also looking at trying to change the way we think of shelter. So rather than a traditional shelter, this instead will be a family assessment center, where we're hoping to bring people off the street quickly, link them to services and try to connect them to other housing options more appropriate to their needs, whether it's longer-term shelter or permanent housing through a Section 8 voucher or other type of housing resource.
I think you said there are about 1,700 beds on Oahu, at least.
Yes.
And 150 of those which aren't filled on a nightly basis. After what you've just said concerning what families need versus what we know single people or couples might need, does that explain the difference, or are there other things that are still barriers to entry? People concerned about privacy, concerned about cleanliness, concerned about who they're going to be sleeping next to?
I think that there's some of those concerns, but when you look at where we have vacancies, they're specifically in shelters for single adults. We know that that population tends to have more chronic health issues and severe mental health issues where they may not, a traditional shelter setting may not be the most appropriate for them. So for that reason, we're also requesting additional funding for Housing First, because we know for that specific population that is effective. Mm-hmm. Using increased funding from Housing First made available through the emergency proclamation, we've been able to get more single adults or long-term chronically homeless individuals off the streets of Kiwalo Basin and Kaka'ako Makai and into permanent housing. I think so far over the past 2 months, we've assisted 57 individuals from that area to go directly off the streets into shelter and housing, including 20 individuals that went directly into permanent housing. And I think that wouldn't be possible if we weren't continuing to make data-informed decisions and increasing our level of funding available for resources such as Housing First or a housing placement program for families.
And additional people on your staff.
Yes.
All right, we're going to take some phone calls now. If you'd like to join us, 941-3689 is our number. If you call us from Oahu, 941-3689. And if you're on the neighbor islands or listening to the live stream, get to us at 877-941-3689. Going to Dave, calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Dave. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. You know what? I think there needs to be a whole new change of paradigms in the way housing is approached, as far as having alternative housing, like Senator Chun Oakland suggested the other day about simple Hawaiian style housing, which will be cheap enough so people can live, we can make it a massive way because developers have no interest in building low-cost housing, and the state and the city have not much interest in providing the funding to build very expensive permanent housing. So these alternative housings are going to have to be kind of a whole new lifestyle and a whole new permanence. And I'd like to hear the comments from your host.
All right, Dave. Thanks very much for the call. Now, what he's talking about is the idea that was floated a little earlier this week by State Senator Suzanne Schoenoeklun and her bill, which we heard, I don't know exactly when, but would have the state appropriate some land and on it have traditional Native Hawaiian structures, hales, and be available to people who are homeless. But no real word whether there would be running water or bathrooms or kitchen facilities or any of that. Jun Yang, as you look at that idea, and Dave clearly has been looking at that, mm-hmm. what do you see when you see an idea like that? Feasible or just looking at everything that might be there for another spark of another idea?
Well, I can tell you, I'm sure Scott, and Scott does as well, when ideas like this come across our desks, we're always going to be looking at them and just trying to see if this is a viable option.
But is it really viable?
You know, I haven't really had a chance to look at this specific project. I know that for the city, what we're working on are a couple of projects that are a little bit out of the box. Our property in Piikoi, our properties in the properties that we're looking at in projects in Waianae and the two in Waianae. When we look at these, and Sand Island itself is an out of the box kind of look and approach. So when we look at these options, what can we do that may be able to lower barriers, bring things a little faster to the market, to allow for our lower income families and homeless individuals to come into housing quicker? And that's why we have a great team with Sandy Fund leading the Office of Strategic Development to say, okay, we're going to acquire some properties and try to build these up quickly, quality units for our homeless populations.
There are people who are hearing you say acquire properties and wondering where they're going to be and all mm-hmm. that, and you may not be at liberty to talk about exactly where now, but clearly we've seen communities sort of push back, including
yes.
in Waianae, but how are you trying to move past that when a community is complaining about homelessness, and some would say not necessarily recognizing that part of the responsibility for ending it might mean having a shelter or other facility in your neighborhood?
So I think all of our listeners in our community realize this, but they have to actually remember we have homeless individuals, homeless families, homeless children living in every part of our community. And it's, I think, compassionate to be able to look at that and say, okay, we will then allow for our community to have a development here. What we're trying to do in the city is to make sure that we are educating our community about who's coming in and how it will be run and make sure that it's a transparent process to allow for people to bring up their concerns and see if the city or government, whoever comes in, to be able to address many of the concerns and to provide quality housing.
Meanwhile, Scott, we've seen people sort of shift again in different places in Kaka'aka, even as there have been sweeps after Christmas time and in the last couple of weeks. What, from both of you, what do you see happening in the next few weeks that that people should know about? Do they know yet what will be happening with those who have moved into other places in Kaka'aka?
Well, I think that, you know, certainly there's been a dramatic reduction of population in the area. I think in, you know, August of last year, there were close to 300 people estimated to live in the area, about 150 tents that were counted. As of last week, we counted only about a dozen tents in the area. I think there's been a dramatic reduction. We do know that 215 people during that time period have entered either shelter or housing, including, like I mentioned, you know, significant number who went directly off the street into permanent housing. You know, we're continuing to work with our outreach providers and the, you know, state and city staff, you know, go into that area, make sure that we can keep our public areas open and accessible to the public while still making sure that we're offering access to permanent housing for those in the area who may remain unsheltered.
We're going to go take another caller. John calling us from Kailua, and if you want to be next, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Scott Morishige is here. Jun Yang is here, Betty Lou Larson, looking at where we are now with homelessness as we're just about at the opening of the 2016 legislative session. Where are we going to be in 4 months, 6 months? We're talking about it tonight. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Aloha, John. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Thank you for taking my call.
A pleasure.
I have a concern related to affordable housing. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear the panel's response to the idea that there is a growing number of people that we can have been referred to as the hidden homeless, living with family and friends who are probably just an argument away from being on the streets themselves. And then the other concern is related to the growing gap between wages and affordable housing. So I'd like to hear their comments on those areas.
Thanks, John, for two good questions. Yeah, we haven't really touched on the hidden homeless yet. People who are couch surfing, maybe living with family members in an additional room that they may have, but not being charged rent, just kind of hanging there by someone's good graces. And as he says, maybe just an argument away. We know many people will burn bridges pretty easily, and then they're out on the street again. So how do you specifically target the hidden homeless, Jun?
Well, thank you, John, for the question. Your voice is very familiar to me. How are you? I want to say that with the city, what we've been looking at to be able to address this population and the need for more affordable housing across our island is by a couple of policy points that we're trying to change. One that we just did in last September, the accessory dwelling units. We are now allowing lots that are large enough to place a small unit and to provide rental housing or more housing stock in the community. So I'd encourage the community to check out the Department of Planning and Permitting over the city and county. The second is one that we're in process on, the changing some of the policies within the city to allow for more affordable housing rental development and affordable housing for sale development as more gets built around the island. We're asking everybody in the community, including those who are building developers, to participate. It will help us to get there. So when we have more affordable housing supply, then we may be able to address the needs of those who are just a paycheck away or one argument away. And this happens every single day. You're absolutely right, John.
Could I comment on that? Because I think
the
ADUs are the new kid on the block, but this could be a blockbuster. This could be really dramatic.
Absolutely.
To bring housing to Oahu. Because what we're hearing is in the Hawaiian community, there are a lot of people who are doubled up, and it really is one argument away. We Catholic Charities, where I work, runs a Mighty Land shelter, and that's what often happens with a young family, that they were living with family, boom, they're out. And then they're in our shelter. So we feel that, you know, the ADUs are targeted to be rentals. I mean, you can rent to anyone. It's not Ohana, where you only can have many family members. But they're small units, 400 to 800 square feet. And what we're seeing and hearing is, okay, maybe there's a family like this, overcrowded. That leads to arguments. Now they can build a small unit. They maybe have their mortgage half paid or they're well along and they could afford to take on that debt. And there's newspaper articles say, hey, for $50 a month, you could build this because of the rent that you're getting in, you know, to pay for the actual construction. So I think this could be a real good thing, not only for, you know, renters, but for people who are overcrowded and want to add that to their property. And the city has estimated that there are 20,000 lots that could be eligible. And if you look at what happened when they instituted Ohana, about 25% of the eligible lots actually did an Ohana property. Well, that would be 5,000 units over the next 5 or 10 years. But it's kind of scary to a lot of people. You have a senior who maybe would like to have someone on the property because, you know, they're getting older. It would be nice to have someone not in the house, but there, they'd have the money, or a struggling family, they're working, but they'd like some more money for education. So these are the people that we really want to encourage. And so what Partners in Care is doing is one of our members is working with the city to create a manual so that would take away some of this intimidating information.
Demystify it a bit.
Right. And going to be having public meetings. meetings and education to help learn about the process. And we have many providers who would love to help you work with a tenant. Find a good tenant. We have vouchers. We have other ways so that you don't have to go to Craigslist and you don't know who you're going to get. So we really encourage people, as they do now, landlords call Catholic Charities a lot. We have many programs for veterans, for young families, to place them when they're on the verge of homelessness. So all of this is the community working together. And I think Oahu, the landlords somewhat show that people do want to do something. They just don't know what to do. So here's how we can work together and really, have new housing, but maybe take a homeless person or a young family famed seen homeless or a veteran or a senior. We, every day at Catholic Charities, we have seniors who need rents at $500 a month.
We're going to continue on with this, but we need to say goodbye to Jun Yang because you have someplace else to be. Thanks very much for the half hour that you were able to be with us.
I appreciate the time, and Happy New Year, everybody.
And we'll talk to you again.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
And as we take this up, looking at how perhaps the safety of having someone pre-vetted might make it a little easier for someone to have an ADU, that's specifically, though, for a unit that is not connected to your house.
Well, an ADU can be not connected. It could also be a renovation where you take part of your house and make
and
it into
off.
A separate. It could be either way. It could be, a renovation with you could have a full bathroom, kitchen.
But what I'm getting at is you have to have the bathroom. You have to have the kitchen. This is not just a room in someone's house
Correct.
For which there will be money to rent it.
Correct.
Scott, as you are hearing what Betty Lou has been talking about and looking at a potential of 5,000 units over maybe the next 5 or 10 years, though, we know that every year that goes by, we get behind more and more behind the curve with that, as good as this may sound. Obviously, it's good for the people who get a roof over their head and they're able to sustain themselves. On the other hand, with the great need of that, is there any way for us to get ahead of this, short of a miracle?
Well, I think certainly, we understand that there is, a housing shortage, not only for the very low-income and homeless, but at all
middle levels of
affordability throughout our state. Mm-hmm. I think the governor and the state have been convening meetings with housing advocates such as Betty Lou, Partners in Care, FACE, as well as developers, and really getting feedback from them on what are some of the specific challenges are to bring up affordable housing in our community. I think based on the feedback and the suggestions, we're making some refinements to our processes to award funding to the Hawaii Housing Finance Development Corporation. We've also, we're requesting a significant amount of funding for affordable housing development. I think $75 million for the Rental Housing Revolving Fund, $25 million for the Dwelling Unit Revolving Fund, and $31 million for the Hawaii Public Housing Authority so we can bring up new units at every level of affordability.
Now, that sounds like a lot of money. But when you actually start to project out how many units that will bring on, what's the final tally with all of that?
Well, I think that, we're still in the process of trying to, have the conversations to see how we can maximize that funding most efficiently. But we do know that we need to make the commitment and put the dollars in that particular area, because if we're ever going to really address this issue, we need to make sure that we have more units online. We need more inventory. And we're trying to look at this comprehensively.
All right. If you'd like to join us, we're talking about homelessness and where we go from here. As we're looking at a new year, a new legislative session very soon to begin, 941-3689 is our number, 941-3689. If you are on Oahu, use that one. And from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. We know homelessness looks very different island to island. We want to hear from you and what you'd like to see happen in your neighborhood to be able to decrease the folks who are homeless right down your street. Going now to Connolly, calling us from Makiki. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
And thank you. There are 2 points that have been raised, one by the gentleman who was speaking and one by the lady to whom you were speaking. The first point is the fact that communities will push back against becoming taking in homeless. And I live at Piakoi and Wilder in Old Makiki. And if you go down Piakoi Street toward the elevated highway, which is another problem in itself, you will come to what is called non-conforming housing. And those are structures built from lot line to lot line, and they are overpopulated, and the pressures of overpopulated are totally visible. When I walk out early in the morning to get to work, I can't cross at many of the intersections because there are vehicles blocking those intersections. There are people parked all over. There's always trash, old furniture, that kind of thing set out. The people, the men, and I will say the city employees work harder than any city I know of, but they can't keep up with it. They take away one load of trash, the next day there's something else out there.
So, Connelly, what would you like to see happen, or is there a question that you have specifically regarding this for Scott Morshige?
Yes, I would like to bring up the point of nonconforming housing, and I cannot believe that anyone is suggesting that substandard housing, teeny tiny units, are the answer. They are not.
All right.
Construction is what I would like to see happen, and livable room sizes, and people can be proud of where they live, not stuffed on a lot somewhere
behind someone else's. Forgive
garage.
Me, but I want to get you an answer from Scott Morshige, so let me get Scott into the conversation. She's saying that, you know, stuffing people into itty bitty tiny places, having them overstuffed, places that she sees every single day, is really tough for her to witness, and tougher still for the people who are stuffed into them. What would you tell her about communities that, you know, are pushing back because of that reason? That's what they think may be happening, as opposed to what you think should be happening.
Well, I think definitely we need to be mindful that we need a range of different types of housing units to come online. You know, micro units and ADUs that Betty Lou was mentioning are, you know, good potential solutions for a specific subset of our population. I think for single individuals, for young adults, for single seniors living on their own, you know, a micro unit or ADU may be a good solution. I think if you have a family, you're going to need a different type of, you know, housing solution. We're trying to make sure that we're putting enough financing forward to address the needs across the affordable housing continuum, and making sure that we continue to get input from housing advocates such as Betty Lou, as well as developers, as we continue to look how we're going to address these needs.
And right now, what you're seeing in the community is this terrible overcrowding. There's a fire and 28 people lose their housing out of one house. Well, that's because there is no affordable housing. And so to avoid becoming homeless, they are stuffed together. Whereas if you have your own place, the typical one bedroom for a senior housing, new senior housing, is about 436 square feet. And the seniors, some say, yes, I have a lot of things, but hey, I can afford it. This, I love it. It's their home. They have a locking door. It's in good condition. And so for small families, this works very well.
Safety and privacy have cachet. So what maybe someone like Connelly might like to see, a place to be proud of, you're saying you've got to adjust what you're proud of and look at what needs it's really meeting.
And I think that there are also some new models coming on. They're talking about micro units, where there might be even smaller units, but again, something that people could afford, because the cost to build is so high that we're looking for ways to reduce it. And this is why I think Senator Sean Oakland has done a great job of bringing the community together, look at different models, looking at container housing, looking at small homes. All of these ideas are now coming out that might be models for the ADUs, so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. They're going to have buildable models that could be in the 400 to 800 square feet range. And actually, for Oahu, a 600 or 700 square foot, I mean, in my building, you know, 700 square feet is a nice two-bedroom.
Well, and in New York, someone would say, that sounds pretty good, too. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 is our number. Tonight we're talking about homelessness. Where do you think that we should be going as we're coming into a new year, seeing what happened last year, looking at some faces which have changed, including Scott Morshige taking over as the state homelessness coordinator? And what do you think might be appropriate in your neighborhood that perhaps we haven't heard about? Going now to Lisa, calling us from Kailua. Aloha, Lisa. Thank you for your patience.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment, and then I'll listen online. One of the difficult things I've come across is we wanted to build a Ohana unit, and the permitting is more expensive to build an Ohana unit than to just, like, add on a bedroom. There's some sort of different type of permit that you need, and my draftsman said an Ohana unit permit is an extra $10,000, which made the whole project impossible for us. Plus, the permitting takes a lot longer. There's a shortage of people doing the permit, and it takes anywhere from 4 to 6 months to even get any kind of project moving, and that's a big part of why there's not a lot of Ohana units being built. I'll listen online. Thank you.
All right, Lisa, thanks very much for calling and sharing some of your experience. Now, Ohana units as opposed to ADUs, a difference?
Ohana units are still allowed. They have to be occupied by a family member. That's a big difference. Oh, well, the other big difference is there's no size limits for Ohana, but you do have limits, and you have protections in the ADUs, like a family member has to be living in one of the houses, and you can have two on a property.
But in terms of the permitting, the time and the cost of all of that, what Lisa is saying is that this alone might be a barrier that someone says they just can't surmount.
That's a great question. But remember, this is a key to the new mayor's housing strategy. This is his goal. This is his big thing. So we're hoping that we can work on this and really pin down the process so that it will be faster, it will be easier, and that's what we're going to be working on in the next couple of months, because you're right, permitting could be a problem, but you know, this is going to have a lot of attention paid to it, and we want to make sure that it does get through much more smoothly, because we hope that thousands of units will come in through this.
And I think that, you know, it's important for Betty Lou and, you know, other advocates working on this issue, I think, to continue to share this type of feedback. I think, as Betty Lou mentioned, one of the members of Partners in Care is working on a manual for those who are interested in bringing ADUs online and trying to put an ADU up on their property. And I think that will help to do more education about, you know, the permitting and some of the other processes that are involved.
But shortening the time frame and the cost is, I think, where Lisa was going with this, wanting to do it, but seeing that there might be some real difficulties in trying to make that happen. We're going to go now to John calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, John. Welcome to Town Square. John, are you there? John, are you there?
Can you hear me?
We can now. Yes, thank you. Welcome to Town Square.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm a property owner, and I'm wondering what you're doing on the Big Island to deal with the planning department and the tax department, because you know, they are very severe if you rent your room in your house as far as your property taxes. And I've had to pull stoves out of my Ohana under my house, and I've had to pull a stove out of the second floor because of a planning department complaint. And, you know, it makes it very difficult to have, you know, reasonable income housing. And I'm involved in housing, and I see the price of housing continually being priced up where people that live here can't afford to buy them, let alone rent them. So I understand how you're dealing with this on the Big Island and how you're coordinating with property tax laws and planning department laws that are very much in conflict with providing reasonable price housing. I'll take the answer off the air.
All right, John. Thank you very much. Scott, I mean, he brings up the same issue in a way that Lisa's talking about, where, you know, wanting to get something done, but obviously we don't know the specifics of his property and what happened. But when he talks about having to pull out some of the things which would be necessary for an ADU or perhaps an Ohana unit, depending upon how it's structured, and he's concerned about getting in trouble tax-wise and also just being able to physically have it, especially when the need is so great. What do you tell him?
Well, you know, first, you know, I think I would thank John, you know, for bringing this issue to my attention. And I think it really underscores the importance of my role, having a coordinator at the state level to help coordinate policy between the state as well as all four of the counties. I mean, I think we really need to have ongoing dialogue with not only Hawaii County, but City and County of Honolulu, Maui County, and Kauai County about how we address these issues, and we can have a consistent, coordinated response, not only to how we respond directly to homelessness, other in the community, but also in helping us to bring up affordable housing.
So are you talking to folks on the Big Island about these issues specifically?
Well, I've been working with the housing department in all of the counties and the mayor's offices, really trying to get an understanding of what's going on in their community. I think that's the first step. You know, my office really has been trying to go out to each of the other islands, get that community feedback. We really need to hear from the community and from the housing departments, you know, what they're seeing, and that will help us to have a coordinated response moving forward.
I think you just did, and I think you just might hear from him again. For the moment, though, we're going to move on. We're going to go to Carl, calling us from Kailua. Aloha, Carl. Welcome to Town Square. Carl? No? Okay, I think we lost him. Carl, are you there? And I'm hearing someone. No, I think we're having a problem with the line. Carl, if you're there, call us back, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If you would like to call in and talk about where you see homelessness going in your neighborhood, maybe difficulties that you're having, some things that you would like Scott Morishige to know, 941-3689. Do we have Carl back? All right. Who do we have online? All right, Charlie from Kaimuki is joining us now. Aloha, Charlie. Yeah. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, Charlie here. Thank you very much for bringing up such an important conversation. Being a longtime resident in several of the neighborhoods, Kaneohe, Kaimuki, down near the airport, Aliamanu, one of the things that we are seeing that is quickly being permitted is was a little bit brought up by a previous caller, to that boundary property line buildings that are two and three stories and being rented out, but not as Ohana, more as single family under the table. So we've noticed this in our neighborhood. Maybe a dozen houses have gone up in the past year. And what we want to know, if you could address this today or off air in the future, is how can we get more regulation into the neighborhoods so that we don't get densified like the people in Makiki are being densified. We are now beginning to have problems with the sewage in Kaimuki because of the density on some of the hills that are going up. So triple house building, calling it single family in the older neighborhoods. Can you address that, please?
All right, Charlie. Thanks very much for the call. Mm-hmm. Mary Lou wants to talk to you a little bit.
I think that that's a difficult situation, but I think this is one reason why the ADUs are so important, because they are have to be permittable, and they are going to be have to look at sewer. They have to. The first step is do they have sewer? If they don't have adequate sewer, it's it. They can't do it. They have to adequate streets. You have to have, I think, at least an 18-foot wide street. There have already been callers who have they want to do it, but their streets are 14 feet wide. Can't do it. Can't build. So now you have a little more control and a little more regulations on what can be built. So, and there has to be a parking space,
But her point that she's making is, look, we're seeing a lot of this building. We know this doesn't look like it's, you know, on the up and up, and yet people are packing in there and they're trying to be compassionate about the fact that people are trying to get roofs over their heads, but not seeing it built from, you know, from property line to property line, the same issue that the woman who called from Makiki was talking about, and looking for real regulations that people within their community know so that they can be, you know, judging it fairly.
Well, I think it's good that these, you know, concerns are being brought to the table, and it's something I certainly can share, you know, with June and your other colleagues at the city and county. I think we really need to, again, as I mentioned earlier, collectively look at these issues that are being brought up by people in the community.
Has there been any sort of, you know, mapping of different communities and what's there and what isn't there? Is there a comprehensive inventory where you know where people are sort of conglomerating, or I mean, I shouldn't say coalescing in ways that we're seeing in maybe Makiki, or this woman is saying is happening in Kaimuki, where there might be some problem areas?
Well, I know, you know, I believe that the city and county, as part of the development of their affordable housing strategy, is looking at that type of mapping of the communities. But I, you know, I wouldn't be able to speak specifically to that. But it's certainly something, again, I can bring up with June and you and our other colleagues at the city and county.
All right. We're going to have to let that stand for the moment there, Charlie. Thanks. Going now to Joanne calling from Lihue. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square, and thanks for
Hi.
Your patience.
Can
Go
you
ahead.
Hear me?
We can.
Yes, I'm Joanne Yukimura. I'm on the Housing Committee Chair on the County Council on Kauai.
Thank you for calling.
And I have a question for Scott, who's been to Kauai and who's been really helpful in our efforts with homelessness, or houselessness. I think we all agree that one of the major pieces of solution is providing more affordable units. And my question is about the policies of allowing developer-assessed housing to be affordable only for 10 years or 20 years or even 30 years, because when the affordability requirement expires, then you have to build replace. You have all these people who are going to be without an affordable house again. And I just read about a month ago about housing in Kaka'ako that's going to be provided, but it's going to be affordable only for 10 years.
All right, John, let me get an answer for you, because that seems to come up again mm-hmm. and again, too, that it's fine to build it and it's great to have it, but unless you have it in perpetuity, then you're just adding to a future problem.
Well, I think, like I mentioned earlier, you know, we understand that it's a very difficult challenge. You know, Governor and the State Administration really has been soliciting input from developers and housing advocates such as Betty Lou and, you know, other groups like FACE over the past several months. We've really been taking that feedback into consideration. And I know that our housing agencies, Hawaii Housing Finance Development Corp. and the Hawaii Community Development Association that oversees development in Kaka'ako have been looking at that feedback very closely, trying to refine our policies moving forward. And I know Betty Lou's been part of some of those discussions mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah, I think that there's some confusion between the affordability period for for sale and for rentals. For sale is a 10-year buyback, and it's much shorter. For the rentals, you pretty much can't even get monies to do a rental if it's under 40 years. And the common one is 61 years or longer, which is considered in perpetuity by many. So that's where you get the points. You win if you're going to go to the state to get financial, you know, the financial resources. It's going to be 40 to 60, more at the 60-year time
true,
frame.
True, but in terms
for
of
rentals.
For purchasing, though, for people who can purchase something that's affordable, to only mm-hmm. have that in the inventory for 10 years, when we talk about mm-hmm. the lack of affordable housing at all levels, seems to be also short-sighted.
Personally, I agree. There is a real what the developers say is, you know, people do have choices. When they're a renter, you don't have a lot of choices. If you find something's affordable, you're going to grab it. When you're out there and you're looking at for sale, you do have other options. And having to only have a 10-year that you can own your unit, or that, you know, you would not be able to sell your unit without losing the equity, that's a disincentive for many people to look at those units. That's what the developers are going to come up with.
All right. Well, we're going to move on and see what Charlie from Makiki has to say. Aloha, Charlie. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. First, aloha to Joanne. Charlie from Kailua, 1950s, 1960s. Just wanted to put that out there. I haven't seen her in many
love years. That when we have guests on the phone talking to each other. Okay.
Hey, I have received the, I'm a disabled senior, 65, and I received this Section 8 housing voucher from the city and county. It's the federal, I guess, HUD program. And currently, I'm living in Makiki, and I know a lot of friends that I grew up with that would rent me their ohana housing in other parts of the island, like Kailua and stuff, but the Section 8 City and County HUD housing does not allow us to rent ohana housing. And it would, I know that where I live here in Makiki, and a lot of the other people I know that live in these project type of housings, that if they would rent ohana housing to us, it would open up a number of small apartments and even one, two-bedroom apartments all over.
Charlie, can I just stop you right there and get Scott to come in and talk? Because what he's looking at is, could there be some greater flexibility with this? Bringing on the ADUs is great, but if there are already some of these units in place that he can't have access mm-hmm. to because of the way the programs are structured, it's a big frustration.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things to understand is that Section 8 is a federal program, so there's federal guidelines put in place by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development that, you know, put certain restrictions on types of units that you can match a voucher with. So I think, you know, that would be good feedback to share with, you know, members of a congressional delegation or representatives from HUD that are based here locally. But I think that, you know, though there are those types of restrictions that are in place, but we want to make sure that, you know, that doesn't prohibit us from looking at some of these new approaches like ADUs that are coming online.
As Which would be should be eligible for Section 8.
As you both are looking at some of the questions that we've heard from, or some of the people that we've heard from tonight, some of the issues that you know, and as we're going forward into a new year, what's on your wish list that clearly wasn't present last year where you might say this is the direction we'd like to go, aside from what we've talked about with ADUs and other parts that may or may happen in the way that you envision? But what's missing, you think, that we still need to put back into the conversation?
Well, we've developed a strategy to help those working families who are homeless, and they have income to pay rent, but there's that gap. And so what we're asking the legislature for is $2 million for a shallow rent subsidy program, up to $500 a month, so that they can pay, they can jump into permanent housing. They're not stuck in a transitional shelter, and especially families with children who are working. They can pretty fast, and then we'll have a financial stabilizer element in there, case managed to help them stabilize, really get into it and be able to be long-term financially stable. That's a biggie. The other thing, we've talked about outreach, but we don't have monies for outreach. So really, we're asking for another $2 million for this intensive outreach. And Partners of Care is refining it because we just found some really shocking data about youth homelessness. And so we're asking for $300,000 out of that $2 million to go look at unaccompanied youth, because it's really, we don't have local data, but nationally 33% of the teens who are lured into prostitution within 48 hours of being home.
And,
and
whatever
shocking
shelter we have isn't 24 hours. Most of them are not.
Right. But if we had outreach that to bring them into the services for youth to really help them, because there are, you know, drop-in centers and things that can then work with youth to try to make a plan to get them into safety, to maybe get them back home, or at least find ways to get them into other solutions besides just on the streets.
All right. So help for youth homelessness and also
overall homeless
and overall the shallow subsidies. Those are the two on your wish list for this year. Scott?
I think, you know, I echo Betty Lou in kind of emphasizing the importance of outreach. I think what we're finding as we look at the data and we look at the most difficult to serve populations, which are chronically homeless, we know that you need to make multiple efforts to engage this population. It really takes a lot of relationship building and assertive community outreach, and we simply do not have enough homeless outreach workers, you know, on the ground. I think the other thing is that we want to increase the level of investment for evidence-based practices that we know work, such as Housing First. We know Housing First is been effective in targeting long-term chronically homeless individuals, moving them off the street quickly into permanent housing. As I mentioned, as we're doing our outreach work in Kaka'ako, it's been successful in moving a significant amount of individuals from that area into permanent homes. We want to make sure that we're able to expand Housing First to neighbor islands as well. I think the last thing that I would like to have on my wish list is really more a change in public opinion looking at the issue of homelessness, and really a better understanding of the complexity and the challenges that face individuals who are unsheltered on the street. There's many different reasons why people fall into homelessness. And I think, I hope for just a greater understanding of the complexity of that, and how there are many of these individuals, even though at first, when you first approach them, they may say, you know, I don't want to go into shelter right now. Many of them really do want to go into housing. They've just had a lot of difficulty accessing housing before in the past.
All right. For the moment, only because we are out of time, we're going to leave it there, but we'll check back in with you as we move through session. Thanks very much, Scott Morishige, the State Homelessness Coordinator, for being here, and Betty Lou Larson, who is on the Legislative Advocacy Committee for Partners in Care, Oahu's network of outreach and service providers, for being here, and earlier having Jun Yang, the Executive Director of the Mayor's Office of Housing for the City and County of Honolulu. He joined us as well, and so did you. We're glad for all of that. We'll talk to you next time on Town Square, and I'll see you tomorrow morning right here at 8 o'clock on The Conversation. Have a good evening.